ARC is a trustless, distinct Layer 2 protocol with a unilateral exit. ASPs, or ARC service providers, cannot steal users' funds or link senders and receivers. Users retain self-custody and can revert their funds to the base layer if something goes wrong on the second layer. We dive into Burak's announcement today, introducing ARC, about a second layer protocol for cheap, non-custodial, anonymous, off-chain Bitcoin payments. You're going to want to stick around for this one. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. We have got a really great read today. I'm sorry, I'm still feeling a little bit under the weather. I'm a little stopped up and still got a tiny bit of a headache, but I'm getting much, much better. It was a crazy, crazy trip out at Bitcoin 2023. And I think right now I'm blaming it on Marty because I found out Marty was sick. And we hung out for like a hot minute and I gave him a hug behind stage. So it's got to be Marty. I'm just going to blame all of this on Marty. But my brother managed to not get sick, so maybe my immune system is just sucky right now. I don't know. It doesn't make sense. Anyway, I'm feeling a lot better, and I'm happy to get back into it, because we have got a crazy freaking read today. This was actually announced at Bitcoin 2023 on the open source stage, and this is one of the most interesting things that happened at the conference, in my opinion. And this could just be an absolutely massive deal. Now, I have to say, I do not understand how this works yet. I have started trying to wrap my head around it, and I promise that I will. That is my job here, to try to make sense of these things for you. But this one is pretty complicated, and I'm trying to put the pieces together. It might have to be some other developer who comes up with a good analogy that kind of makes me understand where these pieces are, but I am diving in as deep as I can, and I will let you know. We're going to have a guy's take on it to really get into the weeds. But right now, we are just going to take this piece as is. We are going to accept Burak's claims, and then I want to talk a little bit about how this is so fascinating in the context of the scaling issue of Bitcoin and the scaling debate that happened during the block size war, and then what this means for Lightning and these other scalar, the layer two ecosystems. And I am stoked. So we're just going to get right into it, and then we'll cover it in the guy's take afterward. Really quick, I just want to thank our amazing sponsors who make this show possible. To Swan Bitcoin, the best onboarding in the Bitcoin space, to get your IRA, your business, your long-term savings plan, to just learn everything there is to know, check out Swan. SwanBitcoin.com/guy will help out the show. If you want to help out the show, that is a really easy way to do it and to get a great service while you're at it. And then also, you're going to want to get when you're replacing your ledger, you're going to want to wipe it, and you're going to want to move everything to your cold card, and you can get 9% off with code BitcoinAudible.com. Check it out, and you should probably get some tap signers while you're at it. And then lastly, you're going to want a full debit card, because if you're using fiat and you're not getting sats back on everything that you buy, man, do I feel sorry for you, because it's like magic. And now, just for signing up the first time you use your card, you will get 50,000 sats for free. And you will give me 50,000 sats if you use my link. So please give me 50,000 sats. I want 50,000 sats. I want it for the both of us. We could be 50,000 sats richer together. We could be 50K buddies. Get your fold card at bitcoinaudible.com/fold. Link is right there in the show notes. All right. So with that, for all my 50K sat buddies, let's get into today's read. And it's titled Introducing ARC. I'm excited to publicly announce ARC, a second layer protocol for making cheap, anonymous, off-chain Bitcoin payments, by Burak. ARC allows recipients to receive payments without acquiring inbound liquidity,
while preserving their receiver privacy. The protocol is as private as Wabi Sabi, as convenient as on-chain, and as cheap as Lightning. Before getting into details, let's talk a bit about my story. As someone who initially started on the big blockers side of the camp, you can imagine I've been a big critic of Lightning myself. I have always had severe objections toward Lightning, centered around inbound liquidity, async receiving, and on-chain footprint. Over time, the more I dig deeper into Lightning, the more I realize some of my objections are kind of addressable in the long term. For example, PTLCs solve the async receiving and proof of payment at the same time, and the shared UTXO model partially addresses the footprint issue. However, unfortunately, I couldn't find a cure for the inbound liquidity issue. Inbound liquidity also felt like a bug to me. It always felt like it simply should not exist. The entirety of it just doesn't feel right. Imagine doing a simple market survey before designing Lightning. Hey, would you use a payment system that requires you to run a server 24 hours that works only if you acquire liquidity in the first place? Do you realize what kind of user experience assumption this is? The ideal end user experience just has to be frictionless. If something works 95% of the time, it's not considered working. Users should be able to simply push a magic button to receive sats and another button to send sats, just like how on-chain funds flow. Anyhow, over time, I came up with interesting solutions to address some of my UX concerns, which eventually led me to work on a new Lightning wallet. At some point, I realized what I'm working on no longer looks like Lightning. It felt more like a distinct layer 2 of its own, a layer 2 protocol that can pay Lightning invoices and get paid from Lightning. However, internally, at its core, a different kind of design. Long story short, my Lightning wallet idea has evolved into a new layer 2 protocol. I've been trying to communicate this with my inner circle, collecting private feedback and iterating on my design. After months-long refactoring and iteration, I realize I have the most optimal design now, and it felt mature enough to share with the entire community what I was working on. Then I made ARC public for the first time at the Bitcoin conference. Link provided, starting at 4 hours and 9 minutes. And posed to the Bitcoin Dev mailing list shortly thereafter. Link provided. Now back to ARC. I named it ARC because it resonated with Noah's Ark to save plebs from Chainalysis companies and custodians. Self-custodial Lightning doesn't work for obvious reasons, and Chainalysis companies significantly threaten user privacy. ARC enables anonymous, scalable, off-chain payments through an untrusted intermediary called the ARC Service Provider, or ASP. ASPs are always on servers that provide liquidity to the network, similar to how Lightning service providers work. There have been, unfortunately, some misconceptions about double spending and the trustless nature of the protocol. ARC is a trustless, distinct layer 2 protocol with unilateral exit. ASPs cannot steal users' funds or link senders and receivers. Users retain self-custody and can revert their funds to the base layer if something goes wrong on the second layer. ARC has a UTXO set that lives off the chain. These UTXOs are referred to as virtual UTXOs, or VTXOs in short. Existing virtual UTXOs are destroyed, and new virtual UTXOs are created on an ongoing basis, similar to how on-chain funds flow. ARC payments settle every 5 seconds and are final in every block. Users need to wait for on-chain confirmations to consider a payment, quote, final. However, this doesn't prevent them from paying invoices with their zero-conf coins. ARC has immediate availability with delayed finality. ARC ensures absolute atomicity by using ATLCs instead of HTLCs. Users can receive payments and forward them further without waiting for confirmations. A mempool-level double-spend breaks the atomicity. ASPs cannot redeem senders' VTXOs if they double-spend recipients' VTXOs. ARC provides an order of magnitude greater level of privacy compared to Lightning. Every payment on the protocol takes place in a CoinJoin round. This obfuscates the trace from the sender to the receiver. The anonymity set is everyone who involves in a payment. Lightning payments, on the other hand, are linked through a hashlock identifier along the route. Hubs in the middle can collude to extract payment info and break the link between the sender and the receiver. Lightning also doesn't scale in terms of on-chain footprint. Lightning is a layer 2 that heavily relies on the base layer to operate. Recent fee market incidents making key Lightning infra unreliable proved this to some extent. Numbers tell us it would take over 100 years to onboard the whole population into Lightning in a non-custodial way, assuming it takes 4 channels per human and an average channel opening consumes a few hundred V-bytes. You may say, okay, channels can be batched under a coin pool or a factory, but still you have to touch the chain very often to close channels. Bitcoin block space cannot handle channel closings at a scale of 150,000 people dying daily, considering closings are TLUV style. Arc kind of checks all the boxes. Maybe I'm just biased. It scales Bitcoin transactions using various ingredients: a shared UTXO model, blinded signatures, plain tweaking, time locks, ATLCs, and some other tricks. Feel free to check out arcpill.me for more info. All right, and that wraps up the announcement, the introductory post about Arc, the new second layer protocol. And I haven't quite wrapped my head around this one. This one's pretty dense. It feels a lot like trying to figure out how Lightning works when I first did that, and that took a lot of going back through and reading over and over again. So, but I do have some remarks on this piece as it is written without knowing the full picture yet. So I want to get a little guy's take on this one, but real quick, let's hit our sponsor and we will jump back in. You know them, you love them. Swan Bitcoin is the place to get into Bitcoin. Seriously, for anybody out there who still has an IRA or is contributing to one and they want tax-free, they want to make sure that they have real Bitcoin in their IRA, not some paper instrument somewhere that swears there's Bitcoin somewhere in it, go to swanbitcoin.com. You can set this up in minutes and start contributing. And not only that, they are going to be the best place for absolute pure signal. The Swan Canon is just Swan Bitcoin in general. Their team, they have built such an astounding resource for everything that you could possibly want to know around it. And if there is anyone who represents pure signal in understanding both the mission, the reason, and how to build a strong relationship with their customers, dude, it is Swan Bitcoin. I have mad respect for them. And that is why I've been using them for freaking ever. So check them out if you haven't. Get your automatic savings and automatic withdrawal to your keys. There is no better way to buy, and there's no better place to buy than at Swan Bitcoin. With that, let's jump back into the guy's take. All right, so this is fascinating. I have a tendency to be skeptical because this is a little bit sounds too good to be true. Granted, there is the 2-week expiration on funds, but you can easily have the wallet built to every time you make or send a transaction in any sort of way that you always refresh the virtual UTXOs that you have. So essentially, as long as you open and do something with the wallet every 2 weeks, you might not ever see that this is an issue, or, you know, you'll basically have like a time down or something. Oh, you need to refresh your wallet. But taking this at face value, that what Burak says is true about this, and that it is this is the interactive version, and if we have something like CTV, Covenants, TX out, or Hash, whatever the hell it is, that one of the things where you can commit to a certain piece of the transaction in this, in what will be signed, then it can be done in a non-interactive manner, which
I know the general difference between those, between interactive and non-interactive, but I don't quite know the degree of interaction in this current setup anyway. Are you having to interact directly with your sender and with the sender and receiver, and then both having to interact with the ASP, and what is removed in this situation? So, or at least by the covenant. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. I want to hit a paragraph earlier on, and what I think this indicates here is the quote says, "As someone who initially started on the big blockers side of the camp, you can imagine I've been a big critic of Lightning myself. I've always had severe objections toward Lightning, centered around inbound liquidity, async receiving, and on-chain footprint. Over time, the more I dig deeper into Lightning, the more I realize some of my objections are kind of addressable in the long term. For example, PTLCs solve the async receiving and proof of payment at the same time, and the shared UTXO model partially addresses the footprint issue. However, unfortunately, I couldn't find a cure for the inbound liquidity issue. Inbound liquidity always felt like a bug to me. It always felt like it simply should not exist. The entirety of it just doesn't feel right." So there's something really interesting about the fact that he started on the big blockers, in the big blockers camp. And something really interesting about Lightning not being the perfect solution. And Lightning was never the finish line. And, you know, I try to make that clear a lot on the show that just in yesterday's episode, actually, I think I talked about how I believed Lightning was going to be a more thought more of as a settlement network and kind of a backbone network bridging all of the layer twos together, that it was essentially going to be this web that connected multiple layer twos, layer threes, and the base layer into this liquidity network that was able to fund payments in and out of all of these other systems. And when you think about the fact that even if at the beginning you're going to say like Lightning inevitably, like without a doubt in my mind, was a 100x scaling improvement, at least I think when you really take advantage of the LSP model and you take advantage of splicing, you could maybe tack another zero on there at the most extreme, you know, most efficient possible mechanism. But the interesting thing about keeping small blocks and forcing the pressure to flow into layer two, into Lightning in particular, because it was the most promising, it held the strongest foundation for a layer two payment system. But look at what it did for how to think about payments in general, how to think about payment service providers and custodians or non-custodial service providers in this new space, that you could have banking without a bank ever taking custody, that you could have payments without Visa ever being able to stop the payment. And look at all of the different solutions that have come about that Lightning has created a trustless mechanism using the time lock, the time lock and the three branches and the insurance clause, the redeemable keys or the revocable keys. And the things like Fedi and Cashew have solved the privacy problem. They've created incredibly private payment networks on top that can be run and executed by anybody, so that anybody can provide this service and that you can split up the trust in these systems. Same with Liquid in the sidechain, that you've got, you know, 50 participants in some quorum that are all across all jurisdictions, and you have confidential transactions. Like, look at the opportunities for privacy when you keep the base layer stable so that you know you can build on top of it. And then you essentially put all of the pressure into this culture of layer two, of understanding how to evolve and change the way we think about payments and change the way we think about our trust relationship with someone who is providing us a service. And how do you get that special mix of you still have custody, you still own your keys, you still can unilaterally leave the group, and you also have privacy built in,
and someone else is able to provide you a service without them ever really taking charge or taking control of the coins themselves. And I think it's fascinating to just keep seeing things that are completely unique land on the scene. Now, a roast beef had a Twitter thread talking about how it seemed to him, and I think very few people have wrapped their heads around the specificity of how this works yet. And I'm in the process of rereading the deep dive section on, I think it's arcpill.me or arcpill.me, something like that. I don't know. I have it in the show notes. On his website, I'm still not understanding all the pieces, the connectors and the VTXOs, like how a lot of this fits together. But just in trying to imagine what this system might look like, just with the pieces that I can discern and like how you might build something like this, it seems like the ASP settles a transaction, nearly instantly, within just a few seconds, but that it's not final, it's not confirmed until the entire pool has a what seems like a refresh transaction that updates maybe the base of these UTXOs somehow, but it's still supposedly a very small UTXO set here, and the VTXOs, the virtual, these transactions that are entirely off-chain are what is being exchanged. So I don't quite understand what we are seeing on-chain in comparison to what is happening off-chain in this regard. I mean, obviously you're seeing a lot less on-chain, but what is being confirmed that makes those new VTXOs more secure, or that the user is able to unilaterally leave the agreement? Then there's another element of the two-week time lock, and it's actually 4 weeks. It's 2 weeks that the receiver can redeem the coins, and then another 2 weeks that the sender can redeem the coins. So it's like if somebody sends me a whole Bitcoin or whatever in this arc, it seems like in those 2 weeks, I have to refresh that into like my VTXO or something to make sure that they belong to me. And if I don't, after 2 weeks, the sender can take them back unless I've done something to essentially ensure or stamp my ownership on them. But then after that, I am now the sender and the receiver if I refresh them back to myself. So maybe that time goes to 4 weeks that I have to refresh it, because both of the VTXOs that I could then claim are mine and the same number of coins. Now, all of this is up for grabs. Again, I don't know if what I'm saying is entirely true. I just know that these elements are kind of part of the system, and that Burak describes it as he was trying to solve a lightning problem. So it seems like he's using, or he must be using, some sort of similar system to the revoked keys and the multiple branches and the updating off-chain in a series sort of thing. But it also seems like there's an element of kind of e-cash, of splitting these up into individual amount of specific amounts, because that's what's being used for CoinJoin. And are these doing blind signatures, or is it quote-unquote private just because of Tor? Because you're connecting and sending this data over Tor and issuing new identities every time you do something? I don't know. There's a lot of moving pieces here. But I find it fascinating that these are the kinds of things, like the number of things that we can figure out how to do without even requiring new tools. So he talks about CTV. CTV is the controversial soft fork that Ruben tried to push or really tried to call attention to because people weren't talking about it. Tried to release a client and do like a speedy thing with the miners, and everybody freaked out and it was like, oh, it's an attack on Bitcoin and all this stuff. And we talked about it a lot on the show, and I tried to pinpoint what was negative about it and what actually made any sense, because there was a lot of just nonsense. There's a lot of people talking about stuff that was just blatantly not true about it. And after a very, very long span of time, basically after the span of time that he was trying to get it quote-unquote soft forked in, which I think really what he was trying to do, and he's kind of
explicitly said this, really, was that he was just trying to force the conversation, and that was the only way he knew how to do it. I actually really hope we go back to CTV. CTV is a really simple setup. I think it's one of the best and lowest simplest trade-off ways, to implement commitments or covenants, so to speak. I kind of use those words interchangeably. I'm not sure what the distinction would be. So if somebody wants to share some details there, let me know. But committing to a piece of the transaction that has to happen in the output. And in that way, there's a lot that you can do with having a secure, because you have a path where you know you can exit from a transaction because of a path that's built into, it has to look like this sort of thing. So you have to have your address there or something. That is one of those soft fork, that along with many other proposals, basically utilizing the same technique or the same concept, that really could be one of the last major. With that, in fact, Novak had a really phenomenal tweet, the CEO or founder and CEO of CoinKite. NVK, if you don't know who I'm talking about, what do you, seriously? But the NVK tweeted that it was CTV, it's the last great soft fork. It would be CTV, signature aggregation, and what was the other thing? It was something kind of quirky. Oh, the time fix, the Unix time fix. Wait, he did have Vault in there too. Maybe it was four things. I should check. I should actually look that up. But you know what? I'm not going to. I'm going to assume that I got it right. But what's funny is that we still haven't figured out how to utilize all the tools that we have. Like, if this works the way that Burak says it does, and the security model is right, and it's not a situation where when, because kind of the way to figure out how this really works, I feel like, is to understand the failure mode, is what happens when things go wrong. You know, if the ASP tries to cheat, does the entire thing have to unravel to the chain? If, because then you've got something, it's kind of like the original idea of Satoshi's channels is that they only work when they're cooperative. And then when they're uncooperative, there's not only is there no scaling solution at all, but it's not even relevant to scaling because you're just having to dump everything onto the chain. And see, I don't know exactly. Do you have to pull or basically push the entire pool's worth of VTXOs to the chain in that case, or their entire history? Like where, how far back do you have to go to prove that your virtual, your off-chain Bitcoin balance is in fact yours? And then the other big scenario, and this is the one that Roast Beef brought up, but Burak seemed to address it in the fact that, or he seemed pretty confident in the fact that he said that, no, this is not necessary. This is that after a confirmation, after the pool transaction is refreshed, I think that's what he was using as a determinant, is that, if the, like, so you're talking about off-chain transfers, right? So like Bob has it, then Charlie has it, then I have it. Bob can still have a copy of the old transaction where he had it, and then he signs it over to Charlie, and Charlie has the new one, and then Charlie sends it to me. But Charlie still has his transaction. Bob still has his. Like, they could store it on their hard drive. Like, there's nothing stopping them from having that piece of data still, even though the Bitcoin is now mine in this off-chain tree or, you know, chain of transactions. So if the ASP colludes with Bob and they publish and sign Bob's transaction, what can I do to make sure I get my coins? What time lock is there, if there is any time lock at all? Is this a space that exists in the mempool? Is this space a space that exists between the next block? Is this a two-week gap? Like, do I always have a two-week withdrawal period to get my coins out? I haven't quite understood where that plays in. When someone in your chain history and the ASP and the service provider running this network are colluding, how does the rightful owner verify or prove their ownership over that other person, because the ASP could be their own player, like right? I mean, this is all over Tor. You can just have another server, another computer, just fake one, like on their own computer. They could participate in their own thing and be lots of the transactions, and then just sign with their ASP node and sign with their node that's going around and participating in all these coin joins and basically steal everybody's funds. And also, how does this integrate with Lightning exactly? Does the ASP have to have channels, or can participants in the ARC, can they have their own channels with their own ARC balances? And so that, you know, as long as all these bridge nodes, so that basically you can have hundreds of channels going into an ARC from a lot of different participants who are connected to it. Or does the ASP actually, since the ASP is like a dominant signer in the coin join or in the entire group, do they actually have to fulfill liquidity into and out of Lightning? But regardless, this sounds really powerful. This sounds like if this does all of the things that he claims without any very explicit and very large drawbacks in certain scenarios that could make this unviable or make it untenable in certain ways or undesirable, like, you know, Roast Beef likened it to state chains and the potential problems there with unraveling it. And then also, I think, the colluding problem. But if this can pull this payment scale off, and this can do this in an interactive way without CTV, and then the benefit that you would get with CTV and some of these other options, like, man, some of the things that we will be able to build with this, it's just crazy to think that the security model of Lightning was just kind of a baby step in the right direction. You know, there's actually something that he said in this that I love how many people kind of like were angry or had this idea in their head that Lightning was supposed to be the finish line. And what I always saw, and I talked about a lot, I think I talked about in my original scaling article from like 6 years ago or something crazy like that. That Lightning was just proof of the concept, proof of the theory that we can extend this off chain and get many multiples scaling improvements without any threat to the underlying base layer. And that we would find ways, and if we force ourselves to live in this space, to live under the restraints of Bitcoin and say, this is how Bitcoin works, and this is how it is going to be kept decentralized, and this is how everyone is going to stay being able to run a node. Whatever you want to do to make Bitcoin better, you're going to have to do on top of this, and you're going to have to get over the fact that you can't change it. Like that philosophy, that push and pressure to stay in that space, in that mindset, has produced some really incredible stuff. And so there's a comment that I never thought of Lightning as the finish line. I thought of Lightning as kind of the proof of concept that, look, we can add two zeros at least to the scaling potential of this, to the effective block size and the number of payments that this can handle, and we can get a touch extra of privacy. We can get a privacy boost at the exact same time without doing anything to the block size, without making any fundamental forks or contentious changes on the base layer. So there's this quote. It says, the numbers tell us, or actually, let's go back up. We'll do both paragraphs. It says, Lightning also doesn't scale in terms of on-chain footprint. Lightning is a layer 2 that heavily relies on the base layer to operate. Recent fee market incidents, making key Lightning infra unreliable, proved this to some extent. Numbers tell us that it would take 100 plus 100 years to onboard the whole population into Lightning in a non-custodial way, assuming it takes 4 channels per human and an average channel opening consumes a few hundred V-bytes. Now here's the funny thing, is that that is supposed to be told as a negative. Is that it's going to take more than 100 years to get everybody on non-custodial Lightning with Lightning as is. But that number is how long it would take for people to be able to have instant and recurring tens, hundreds, maybe thousands of payments each having been onboarded into Lightning. So we're already talking about order of magnitudes, multiple orders of magnitude improvements in scaling. And when I see it's 100 years to onboard the entire population into Lightning in a non-custodial way, my way of thinking just says, so we only have to have one more 100x improvement and we can onboard the entire world in a year. And that's why I think it made sense to me that things like Fedi and eCash and Liquid and these sidechains, these were the best that we had in regards to, they had privacy benefits, they had distributed custodial risk, they had spread out jurisdictional risk. There's a lot of potential benefits to a lot of these. And you can isolate them or you can bring them down to a more local level. It's a whole lot easier to use a Fedimint with people that you know in your neighborhood, or an eCash with somebody that you know personally in a local community. And then you can bridge into the Lightning Network. You can genuinely alter the nature of trust and the nature of service providers within that system. And in doing so, you can scale the trust massively by bridging into the Lightning Network and basically having this a million Uncle Jim's sort of model where the market is far more connected and closer in both trust and proximity to from between the service provider and the customer. And you don't have this big, giant, corporate, distant, nobody knows anything. Everybody is just a blind dependent. Everybody is totally at the whim of some corporate overlord somewhere. And so just in those sorts of models, I think that is a sufficient way to fundamentally and deeply change the nature of the entire planet and how we think about trust and authority and how we build communities. But even that, again, we still just need a single 100x improvement or three 10x improvements, and we've got room to spare. And that's where CTV and these things like batched signature aggregation and channel factories and coin pools, you know, if you get an average of 10, 20, 50 participants, or you can figure out how to deal with a significant portion of them going offline without it affecting other portions of the pool, like there's always like the magic of being forced to find a trick to make it work to get that extra 10x improvement, to get that next 100x. Leads to exactly the developments like this. And I really genuinely hope this is what it claims to be. Because this could easily be that 100x. Easily. If it genuinely works this way, and it's that simple, and everybody can onboard with just a simple address, and with just a light client watching the chain, that they can watch the mempool, and that if there's ever any alert, they can go to the chain, and that there isn't a significant colluding problem. And you know, maybe that's where you start talking about even splitting up the ASP. Like this doesn't seem any reason why the ASP can't be a threshold, whether it's one person with a threshold just to separate it by jurisdiction. Like, you know, they have a server, like let's say I have a 3 of 5 multi-sig threshold that's running an ASP, and I have a server in the US, I have a server in Canada, I have a server in Brazil, I have a server in Russia, and one in China. And then if China and Russia go offline, or they, you know, go hardcore firewall, and they're like, no communication in these sorts of networks, or encryption, or whatever, well, then everything's still running, because it's the servers in Canada, the US, and Brazil that can still sign. Or wait, I wouldn't put it in Brazil, I put it in El Salvador. But you get the idea. You can distribute the keys, and then you can still do, or it would seem like you should still be able to do a federated service provider where you could split up the ASPs, so that even in the idea, even in the risk of colluding, that you could potentially mitigate that if that is in fact a problem here. But it doesn't seem like, I want to say it seems like Burak is saying that that's not a problem for some reason, and that this is solved without CTV. So that's going to be my goal over the next little while. We're going to do a guy's take on this. When I feel like I have a grasp on this, I Hopefully it's this week, maybe next week. I really don't know when, but maybe I'm going to try. I've reached out to Burak too. I'm sure a bunch of people that are already asking him. He's like, oh, come on my show. So maybe I can just get him to answer some questions. Maybe I can get him on the show. But I want to really go through the failure modes, and I really want to wrap my head around this like I wrap my head around the Lightning Network, because this could be huge. This could be a really big freaking deal, to have the combination of all of those things with essentially a service provider. Like, this could replace Lightning service providers, and or could work in tandem with them to essentially provide a next level up service. And I don't care who you are, that shit's exciting. So we are going to be talking more about this. And like I said, I'm going to be diving in. Also, keep an eye out or an ear out. Another episode of AI Unchained is coming, but it will not be in this feed. So make sure you are following AI Unchained on both YouTube and on the RSS feed, because there is a lot I just recorded this morning. And some things are going to be dropping very soon, so stay tuned over there. A lot is happening in that space as well. And I will catch you back here with another episode of one or the other. I got lots of things coming, so thank you guys so much for listening. A huge thank you to Fold, to CoinKite, and to Swan Bitcoin for making this show possible. Check out our amazing sponsors. You know, and these are not arbitrary sponsors. These are companies that I use and products that I love, and I do not shill them to you lightly. I only tell you because I know that you will be in good hands. So check them out. Goodies, discounts, special links that help out this show also right there in the show notes. And thank you to Burak for this whole thing, for the arc. And we will be diving deeper in, so don't miss it. Stay subscribed, and I will catch you on the next episode. Until then, take it easy, guys. To teach that a comparatively few men are responsible for the greatest forward steps of mankind is the worst sort of nonsense. Henry Ford.